Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Sunday Morning Philosophy, the Church of the Endless Brain. I hope you are doing well, and I hope you're looking forward to a great day of progress. Doesn't always mean a great day. Doesn't always mean a great day, of course, but a great day of progress. So, a bit of an unusual circumstance here today. A bit of an unusual circumstance. So I actually got permission from a private caller to talk about something. So, of course, I do these private calls, call.freedomain.com, and they are one-off, and they are entirely private, which means, of course, I can be certainly a little bit more blunt. And I had a private caller who said that he was fine with me talking about something important that came up or that I passed along over the content of the call. So obviously I'm not going to go into any details about the person, but I did want to talk about the lesson that came out of the private caller because I've talked about it here and there scattered, but I really did want to get it in depth across. So again, happy to take calls, but give me a couple of minutes and I can change your mind, world, future, being, neurons, patterns, and I think level of happiness. So we'll call him Bob, although it wasn't even necessarily a male. So Bob has a problem with someone in his life, someone important. And Bob wanted to go over how best to approach that person. And I thought that was very interesting, because you always have to make sure that your premises are correct. So I am 99% Cartesian in a way. Cartesian is a sort of out of René Descartes, who sat in a room alone and tried to figure out what he could say that was true beyond all doubt. You know, I mentioned this on the Sam Hyde show, you know, wipe the entire slate clean of everything in your mind. So if you say, I'm willing to doubt everything, I'm willing to wipe the slate clean of everything that I know, what can I build with absolute certainty? Because, you know, the premises, axioms, you know, sort of the roots of thought, we say, okay, well, assuming the senses are valid, blah, 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 blah. They used to do this in math sometimes. I can't remember the name of the proof, but it was like, assuming Alexander's proof is true, we can blah, 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 blah. And they found it worked every time, but they didn't have a proof for it. And eventually they came up with a proof, but they would say, well, assuming this is true, we can now do X, Y, and Z. So the Cartesian approach is to say, I assume that nothing is true. And this is why, this is sort of famous, I think, therefore I am. This is why it comes from that. And he said, look, even if I'm a brain in a tank being controlled by some demon, even if all of my sensory input is invalid, even if I'm in a waking dream and then a nightly dream, and even if I don't know anything true about anything outside of myself, even if I'm being fooled by everything around me, I can for an absolute certainty know that I exist because I am being fooled. Even if I'm a brain in a tank, the I is the only part of that sentence that is absolutely true. I am being fooled. If someone, when I used to live in the business world, I would get these calls, you know, from these skeevy little parasitical Wall Street type vermin. Oh, we got the stock. It's about to pop. You could double your money in 6 months, 3 months. I'm just trying to help you. You want to get in on this. You know, this is a ground floor opportunity. This is like being the third guy in Facebook. You know, you can become rich. Like just absolute skeevy, toady, wretched con men. I mean, this is where, yeah, our ability to act comes from conning people, simulating emotion in order to gain resources. Matt Damon is, well, politically just about the lowest whore around, but yeah, willing to participate in the attempt to retroactively abort European culture with the sloggacy. These people would they would call up and they'd sort of be very passionate. And of course, the only thing I know is that they're trying to fool me, right? They're calling me, they're trying to fool me. Even if the whole thing is an illusion, not just the stock value, but the phones, the person, right? So when you have choices in your life, how do I approach this person with whom I've had many, many years of bad treatment, right? How do I confront this person who's done me wrong? How do I approach this person? What's the best way to approach this person? And I asked him for his reasoning because, you know, I'm always eager to hear people's reasoning. People's reasoning can obviously be better than mine, because especially when it comes to something personal, because they know the situation. I'm just finding out about it for the first time. They've lived with it, in this case, for decades. And he said, well, I'm obligated to tell this person the truth. And, you know, I've tried in the past, it hasn't really worked, but I'm obligated to tell this person the truth. And if I decide I don't want to talk to this person anymore, I'm obligated to tell them that, because it's the truth, and I'm obligated to tell the truth, and I have to tell the truth, and I have to be honest, so I have to figure out how to talk to this person. And if I decide not to see this person anymore, I'm obligated to tell them why and what's happening and so on. And that's very interesting. That's very interesting. And I wouldn't say that I disagreed. Because, you know, if somebody says, well, I must tell the truth. I want to tell, of course we want to tell the truth. Yes, I get that. That's an important thing. But the problem is, for me, if somebody puts some weapon to your head and makes you do something, is it virtue? I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, if somebody puts a weapon to your head and makes you rob a bank, then clearly you would not go to jail for robbing the bank, at least in a just legal system, because, well, obviously, right, you didn't choose to rob the bank, you're under compulsion, and so on, right? It's one of the general principles behind something like the Nuremberg trials after World War II. The men who were drafted, who were forced to fight, and so on, were not found guilty of any crimes. They were under a state of compulsion. However, the leadership, who didn't have to be there and were making a choice, right? So where there is choice, so is there virtue. Where there is choice, so is there virtue. Now, of course, if we're talking about UPB violations, non-aggression principle violations, I mean, that's a different matter, right? But, you can choose to tell the truth or not to someone, and that's not a UPB violation. That's not necessarily good or evil, unless it's a kind of desperate fraud, which, of course, isn't the case with us lovely philosophy people. So I'm not talking about the four major UPB categories. I'm talking about something as complicated as how much truth to tell in a corrupt, quote, relationship. So when the people would call me with these stock offers, now, listen, I was young, I was excited, and I would sometimes listen for a little bit. I never, and you know, was I vaguely tempted? Sure. But once I realized overall it was all just nonsense, and of course, it doesn't really take more than a moment. It's like you can overcome irrational greed with rationality, right? You can't overcome greed, that's a human emotion. You can't just switch it off, but you can overcome irrational greed with rationality. And you say to yourself, you say, well, if these shares were a sure thing, baby, and they were going to go to the moon and 10x in 10 months, right, then they would not be calling people, random people, to get them to buy this stock. They would be buying the stock themselves, right? No, I just want to share I want to share this bounty. I want to, yeah, because parasitical fiat-based finance is well known for sharing all of its bounty with the common man. You can tell that just by looking at your bank fees. So I would have to say to them that if you just hung up, they'd call back and say, hey, man, I think we got disconnected, blah, 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 blah. So I would listen for a minute or two and say, I've got a meeting. It sounds fantastic. Let me get your number. I'll run some numbers. I'll call you back. And then that was the best way to get them off the line. Now, did I have any intention of calling them back? Was I telling the truth when I said, this sounds like a great opportunity? No.
I lied.
I prevaricated. I falsified.
I lied. Lies! Thou shalt not bear false witness.
Women do this, of course, as do men. Maybe men do this too. The famous, I have a boyfriend. I have a boyfriend. There was some woman in a bikini at some, I think it was a festival of soap suds or something like that. There was sort of soap suds flying around. And some guy came up and she gave him a sort of coy, wry look. I have a boyfriend, went back to her dancing and so on. And just because she had an animated face and was willing to engage, she apparently has become some kind of sex symbol now. She's just a 20-year-old woman who's not obese and has lively expressions. Apparently that's all you need these days. I mean, that's it. She could still be dancing provocatively at some soap suds festival with her butt hanging off of her bikini, but apparently because she's got an animated face and she's not obese, that's all you need. So I lied to these people trying to sell me these shite junk penny stocks, right? I lied. It really sounds like a great opportunity. And I appreciate you calling me. It's very nice for you to rope me in on this. Let me just run some numbers. And I've got a meeting right now, but I will get back to you. Are you sure? I will get back to you. And then never call them back. And usually that was the best way I sort of found over time to get rid of them. So I lied. If you're honest, you know, I like to put in the, maybe you're the absolute purist who never lies. I doubt it. I mean, to tell the truth constantly wouldn't even make any sense. You couldn't possibly tell the truth all the time because you wouldn't get anything else done. Here's the truth. Here's how I feel about feeling the truth. Here are the feelings that the feelings I had about telling the truth are occurring. Oh, no, now one of them is dimin-. Like you just, if you're trying to communicate everything that's going on in your mind as honestly as possible, you'd never get anything done. And words will only ever be an approximation of what is going on in your mind. I mean, if you've ever had a complicated feeling, I remember there was an old Dave Letterman book of jokes, and there was an actress named Pia Zadora, and she had like one expression, and they were making jokes about Pia Zadora's acting expression, and one of them was bemused resignation. I always remember that, bemused resignation. It was the same as anger, as the many emotions of Spock kind of thing. It was actually a fairly funny book. This is from the 80s, I think. Bemused resignation. So if you've ever woken up with a soft kind of complex, cobwebby, ashy nostalgia for bad times in your childhood, how do you communicate all of that? I mean, you can squeeze it through the narrow aperture of language, but you can't get the entire thing across. You can't reproduce the experience for others. So, I lied. You lie. You ever walk past someone who's asked you for money and you say, I don't have any money on me? You ever go into a store? You're looking for something in particular, but you don't feel like interacting with a sales clerk and they say, can I help you with anything? And you say, no, and I'm just browsing. Because you want to take your own time, you want to mull around, or maybe you're a little shy, you don't like engaging in much conversation with strangers, anything. When I go to get a haircut, easiest haircut known to man. Number one, square back and sides. Shave down my Congo neck just a little, if you don't mind, monsieur. And with seemingly great pride and happiness, they hold up that mirror and I look at my giant half-ass cheek of the back of my head, and they say, what do you think? Well, what I think is, I look mostly bald. That's what I think. I mean, they seem to want to have me admire the artistry of me, 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 buzzing the giant double D half boob of the back of my head. Well done. You have made that which is longer, shorter. Amazing. What an artist you are. It's about as much art as bricklaying compared to carving Michelangelo's David.
What do you think? It's magnificent, sir. You have made that which is long shorter with your buzz-buzz machine. Well done.
Now, maybe they're engaging in a ritual, like to make me feel better or something like that. Or the last time I got a haircut, the very eager barber put his card in my hand. When you want your haircut, you come back to me. And I'm like, sure. I'm never going to call the guy. Like, I don't have that in my head. I get a haircut when my wife says, "You look ridiculous. You look like a wounded dandelion." It's kind of true. I'm not going to argue. She's pithy and accurate. And, but the idea that I remember Luigi from the place with the buzz. I must go back to only Luigi can handle my mane. I have a mane, but it's with an NG, or a GE at the end, right? My mange. So I'm like, yeah, sounds great. And then I left the barbershop and I tossed it in the garbage, not out of any negativity towards the guy. Seemed like a nice guy. No problem with that. But in no universe am I going to devote any part of my brain power to getting the right frickin' haircut. I mean, you know, bald sucked a little bit when I was going through it, but now it's absolutely glorious. You don't have bad hair days when you have a bad hair life. Like, they're all bad hair days and you don't need to worry about it. So this guy says to me, you must come back to me and only me. And I'm like, I don't really think that's true. You know, like somebody who gives you a car an oil change, you must come back to me. It's like, well, you drained out the oil, you put in some new oil. I'm not really sure that it's a just you phenomenon. I mean, if I have delicate surgery and you're the best in the field, then yeah, give me a card. But if it's just like, change my oil, shave back my goofy late middle-aged dandelion fluff, yes, anyone can do it. And I've never had a bad haircut since I lost my hair. I've never had a bad haircut. I mean, when I was a teenager, my brother came back from England after spending a couple of years there with relatives. Yes, he got me into a decent barber. I used to, when I was younger, I would go to save money. My mother would either sometimes do my haircuts herself, like a literal bowl cut. And once she did it with pinking shears, which are those ones that have the zigzag up and down. And I went to school with my forehead looking like some Italian cafe barbershop awning. But and she would sometimes take me down. We would go down to Pape. And you could get your hair cut for $2 because they were student barbers. And I'm going to immortalize this forever for no particular reason. I remember because I was on the swim team and the water polo team. And my hair had turned slightly green from chlorine. And the student barber who was cutting my hair, and I was like 14 or so, maybe 13, said, "Oh, you swim a lot." And then her supervisor, who was passing by, says, "You know, come back after the shift. She'll tell your whole future." I just remember that joke from, oh my, many moons ago. That probably would be 1979. So, ramble tangents aside, as if they can be winked or whisked out of existence, I lie. Have you ever had food that's just okay? It's okay. I mean, I picked up a sandwich from Tim Hortons the other day, and it was like genuine ass meat between soggy bread. But of course, for reasons pretty obvious, Tim Hortons has gone down the toilet over the last couple of years. But, you know, you ever go to the restaurant, and the food's okay, right? I mean, maybe it's food that can't be great. Like, you just go and you get, you know, eggs and toast. How's your food? Well, it's not currently on fire, so it's fine. I mean, it's eggs and toast, really, really. Can you have fantastic eggs and toast? I mean, I'm talking at a diner. Maybe it's some sort of high-end Hilton you can, but the diner. Eggs and toast. And a side of, not hash brown, home fries. You know, the little squares. And the idea of eating deep-fried potatoes in the morning is kind of repulsive. But, you know, egg sunny side up. Side of toast. Slice of fried tomato. How's your food? It's food. I can digest it, and it doesn't taste anything different than eggs and toast and tomato. We say, that's good. That's good. Thank you. Now, occasionally I will have a really good meal and I will really tell people, like even at a fast food place, I like when I return the tray or whatever, like, man, that was really good. Like, thank you. That was fantastic, right? But you say, it's good. It's good. Yeah, thanks. Is it good? It is what it is. It's whatever, right? It's okay. If I'm feeling particularly desperate for caffeine and I'm in, like, Lord above help me, I can't even say it. Lord God above help me, if I'm desperate for caffeine and I'm in a bar, and I say to the waitress, really, trying to be honest with me, how's your coffee? I mean, you go to a cafe, you'll get a good coffee. You go to a bar, you're going to get industrial bilge water flecked with Guinness leftovers. It's not going to be pretty. But, you know, if you're an addict, as it could be conceived that I am, fine. If I can't get the good stuff, I'll get the bad stuff as long as I get the stuff. And then you get the coffee, and it is, as you expected, industrial sludge with that strange leftover from Nescafe from some tin in London from 1979. And she says, how is the coffee? You say, it's not bad. It's not bad. When it is in fact bad, what are you going to say? I mean, actual truth, direct truth. And, you know, maybe this is bad. I don't know. But I am generally of the opinion that it is in fact quite important to be polite. I mean, we've all done it. Come on. You have a headache. You slept badly. You woke up. Oh, my neck was at 1 degree away from normal. And now I have a crick. Oh, no. And I got up at night to use the bathroom and I stubbed my toe. And I had the claw foot of sleepless agony. And, you know, you're having a bad morning. And, you know, you're getting something or talking to someone. How you doing? Good. I'm good. I mean, you don't want to unpack your tale of nightly woe and exhaustion.
Last night, I was lured into eating something that I could have easily digested when I was younger.
I remember I had a pretty good relationship with one of my professors at York University because he cast me in all the plays he was directing. He really liked my acting, so I got the lead in all of his plays. And I remember, because he had me start coming in to talk about a play and so on, and he never auditioned me. And he's like, you got it, man. You're the best actor in the university. So that was nice. I never take things for granted. Anyway, I remember once after a rehearsal, we were chatting about the play or something, and there was a hot dog cart. And I went out, and it was $2. And I used to do this a lot because, you know, I was broke. And so I would go to the hot dog cart, I'd pay my $2, and I would get a hot dog and I would load it up, right? Load it up. This guy had amazing stuff. You ever come to those hot dog vendors with the infinite buffet of toppings? It's incredible. So I'd put some cheese on top, put some onions on top. He even had tomatoes, which is kind of unusual. Put the relish, put the mustard, squirt some mayo, a couple of other things. Olives. Oh yeah, he'd have olives, black and green olives. Like, it was amazing. The guy was just an infinite cavalcade of cruise line buffet stuff to put on the hot dog. And so I pay my $2 and I'd get this mountain of food. And I would, you know, I'm a polite guy, so I would wait for the professor to start talking. And, he was a long-winded fellow, not that I'm going to throw any stones in my giant Billy Joel glass house, but I'd wait for him to start talking and I would take a big bite of my hot dog and salad and mountain of everything. And I remember he looked at me. And he's like, enjoy that while you can. Enjoy that while you're young, because I guess the idea that he would eat it. And I don't have too sensitive a stomach, but last night I picked up a burger and fries. Kind of unusual. I don't normally eat something like that, but, you know, you have a hankering or whatever. And I said, I'll just eat half, but it was so good. And anyway, so I think that may have had something to do with a slightly tepid sleep schedule or whatever it is, right? So you wake up and maybe you're not feeling super alert. Or super happy, and people say, how are you doing? I say, fine. Anyway, so lies, foul lies. So back to my caller. Bob. Bob says, I got to talk to this person because I got to tell the truth. I got to be honest. Now, the moment you say, I have to, you can't be moral. Look at that. Only half an hour in, and I get to the point. Ooh, personal best. Light off the fireworks. Release the doves. The moment you say, I have to, I must, you can't be moral. Because then you're just following orders. Do you see? You're just following orders. And you can neither be good nor bad. You're like someone in the Ukrainian front, skulking down the street, hiding at home. You have to go out for some reason, got to renew your driver's license or pay your taxes or whatever it is. And then you get grabbed, you get thrown in the van, you get a couple of weeks of training, you get sent to the front, and you get disassembled by some drone. There's no moral content because you're under compulsion. You've been drafted. You've been enslaved. So, the moment you say to yourself, I have to, I must, it's no longer moral. Morality is based on choice. If morality is you just taking orders from abstractions, then you're just obeying. It's like praising the direction that a train is going in. The train can only go in a sustained way in one direction, which is where the train tracks are. Oh, good choice going left on those train tracks through the mountains. Good job. That was very skillfully turned. Well, I guess you could talk about speed, but, you know, assuming it's a reasonable speed, the train is going to go where the tracks are. And of course, can you imagine hijacking a train? Take me to Switzerland. Like, bro, we're in the Rockies. We ain't getting to Switzerland. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, the plane, yeah, you can take it, you know, and redirect and pilot can fly places, whatever, right? But a train was an old joke when I was young. Did you hear about the Irish IRA guy who did that to a train? The mark of honor, because the train is following the tracks. So in your life, when you say to yourself, I have to, I must, you're no longer good. You're just following orders. You're just making yourself do something. And this kind of liberation is really, really important. I mean, we all want to be good. We should all strive for virtue, consistency, integrity. Yes, absolutely. 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 Lying can be extremely efficient. How long would it take for me to explain to the barber that I don't care what the back of my head looks like? I don't. I mean, I felt him buzz it. It's fine.
Look, at the back of your head, it is like a magnificent, semi-hairy baby's ass cheek. And I'm like, I don't care. It's just thank you for making it shorter. I don't look like a ridiculous dandelion fluff, so I'll be on my way. I mean, people rarely see the back of my head. I'm not like Jim Morrison when he first began singing. He sang with his back against the audience because he was so shy. I'm not going to do a show with you guys looking at the back of my head. So am I going to explain all of that to him? No, it's good. It's efficient and it's harmless. Now, if I were to say, well, you know, if he asks me what I think of the haircut, I have to explain everything. If he gives me this speech about how I should call him and only him to get my next haircut because he's so good, and it was at a place that was relatively far away from my home, just happened to be out there at the mall, and my wife's like, yeah, get a haircut. And I'm like, oh, sure. Good plan. I'm not driving out there to get a haircut. Am I going to explain all of that? No. Is it going to make any difference? No. It's a waste of time to tell the truth when it affects not at all the outcome. I mean, it's not like I made an appointment and failed to show up. That's different. Do not turn philosophy into compulsion. I woke up this morning after having an interesting night of trying to digest something that I would have been fine with when I was 20. Big giant lump of gristle and carbs. And I didn't order fries, but it came with fries. I had a couple of fries, which is unusual. I don't normally eat fries. I mean, they're pretty good if they're fresh, but I don't normally eat them. And I was like, ooh. You ever eat that stuff? And it's like, congealed bowling ball is now passing through
the London subway map of my lower intestines. I remember the girl who asked me to go steady when I was 12. I remember her family took me out for lunch, and after lunch there were these mints on the table, like comes in the little flappy pouch that the bill comes in. And I put the after-dinner mint, it's a fairly big mint, in my mouth. And then her father asked me something, and I wanted to be polite, and I swallowed quickly to answer him. And then they lingered there for another half an hour while this mint was having some sort of high-speed chase through my esophagus and whatever leads to your stomach. And it was, and we went there. Your stomach takes 4 hours to empty or whatever, right? So, but I remember, like, I felt this every twist and turn of this highly tremulous death egg moving its way through my innards. And I had to just sit there like, oh, don't react. I'm sweating. I'm trying to concentrate. They must have thought I was some sort of drug addict or something like that. I'm sweating. Body's jerking from time to time as this thing careens around like some sort of Rocket League blow-up doll. Am I going to sit there and say, oh, you know, I got to get up and move around. I'm so sorry. I swallowed the giant murder egg and it's now attempting to vivisect me from the inside out. I got some Hannibal the Cannibal rolling around in my gut. Nope. Just grinned and chatted and attempted not to look like I was giving birth to some alien life form through my armpit. It's generally a good plan to have over the course of the day. Don't make yourself do things. Now, not that any one of you lovely, gentle listeners would, you know, obviously don't shoplift. don't do things like that. And so if it's UPB violations, yeah, make yourself do that. Make yourself not do that, whatever it is, right? If you have the urge to smack someone because they're really annoying you, okay, yes, don't do that, right? Make yourself not do that. But I'm not talking about UPB violations. That's not a thing. The UPB violations is not a thing that we, as an audience in general, need to be overly concerned with. I've had a couple of people over the course of 21 years talk about, you know, I hit this person or I smacked this person or whatever it is, and they're usually ashamed of it. And so we work to resolve that. So I'm not talking about UPB, a non-aggression principle. I'm just talking about the private call that the person kindly said, feel free to talk about this with others. And so this is a sort of sample. I guess you could say this is a little sample platter of a private call. So he said, I have to talk to this person who's done me wrong for many, many years. I have to talk to this person. I have to be honest. And I said, but it's not honesty if you have to. It's not honesty if you have to. So if you have a girlfriend and you grab her phone, let's say it's still unlocked, right? You grab her phone thinking it's yours and there's cheating text messages right there. And she looks up, oh my God, she realizes the horror of what's happening and she says, I'm having an affair. Is she virtuous for telling the truth? Nope. No, of course not. She just realizes that you've just seen it. You pop open the phone and right there is some man's tumescent 75-degree skyward-looking Richard picture. Ah, well, at least you had the common sense to choose a man who is intact. I had an affair. I'm confessing. Well, is she telling the truth? Yeah, I mean, technically she's telling you the truth. Does she get any points for it? Is it virtuous? No. Not at all. She's not racked by conscience. She's not chosen to tell you because she feels bad. She's just, oh, he's caught me. I might as well confess. Might as well get ahead of this. And then later on, she can say, at least I told you. It's a manipulation, right? There's no points there. It is pointless. If you make yourself, I mean, I do this on a pretty continual basis, right? So I woke up. I wasn't bad. I could have used a little bit more sleep. I woke up about 9:15 this morning. And I only fell asleep around 4 in the morning. It's kind of unusual, but whatever, it happened. So it's the burger. Now, did I say, oh man, I got to get up. I have to, I got a show scheduled at 10. People are counting on me. Gotta do it. No.
The only thing I gotta do is die.
No, I could have just said, I don't feel like it. I don't want to. I'm not going to do it. And in order to preserve my pleasure at doing the show, at having this conversation with you, in order to preserve that pleasure, it has to be chosen. I have to choose to do the show. I gotta. It's just taking orders, being pushed around, and having the weaponry of sophistry to your head, and then saying, well, I did the right thing. I fulfilled my obligations. I blah, 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 right? I'm a good boy. I obeyed orders. These two thoughts cannot ever coincide. I'm a good person. I obeyed orders. Nope. I mean, for those of us who suffered under the extremely dangerous COVID tyranny, how did we feel about all of those who just did the right thing, obeyed orders, did what was expected, did the right thing, saved granny, turned on the unvaccinated? Did we feel like, oh, they were good people? Yeah, they did what they were told. So they're good people. Nope. Even if what you're being told is good, you're not good for obeying it. And I know I'm shouting at you from some potentially completely imaginary higher mountain of ideal being. That's not the case. I have to remind myself of this stuff, right? I don't have to. I can quit all of this tomorrow, go work in a gas station. I can fulfill my lifelong dream of becoming a mime in Australia. It's not really a lifelong dream, but if I had one, right, I could go do that. I can wake up and I can go backpacking alone through the Ural Mountains if I want and never touch a microphone again. Never. Because the only way what I do has value is if I don't have to do it. I could follow Jesus' induction. Sell everything I own. Give the money to the poor. Join a monastery. Pull a full Leonard Cohen. I could do all of that. Leonard Cohen, the famous singer-songwriter. Some Hallelujah, you probably know. Bird on a Wire. Aaron Neville's version's amazing. He was in a monastery. He had a gravel voice. He was in a monastery. And he came back out because his girlfriend, I think, either spent or stole or whatever, but his money was all gone. All I need is a pint today if I ever get out of here. His money was all gone. Got to be a reason why my money's all gone. I got a Dalmatian. I can still get high. I can play the guitar like an... Anyway, you know the rest of that song. I can do anything. I can do anything. You can do anything. Ah, yes, well, you know, I got to eat. I got to live. Yeah, well, sure. I get that. You don't even have to do that. Make it a choice. And that's the only way to make it good. What you choose can be virtuous. What you do under the compulsion of, quote, virtue is just obeying orders and is not good. You ever have this? I'm sure you have. I can't be alone. You ever have this? This is when I was younger, right? I put a lot into relationships. You know, I mean, I like to help. I mean, the call-in shows. I thought they were all going to be about philosophy, but turned out people wanted to talk about personal stuff, which is fine. I'm not complaining about that. That's interesting and important and valuable. Now, my wife says psychology grew out of philosophy because philosophy was not enough to get people to change. It's actually a very interesting perspective. And more than a perspective, I think there's something fundamentally true about it. Which is why when I was talking about all these abstractions and good and evil and right and wrong and UPB, and so she says, I remember just standing in the kitchen, she said, yeah, but it all starts with the family. Oh, electric arcs crossing through every neuron in my brain, reshaping, reforming, helping define my life's work. Amazing person. So, you ever have this, you put a lot into relationships, you help people, you give them feedback, you try to give them some guidance, you maybe lend them some money. I mean, geez, when I was younger, because I was a chief executive, I was a chief technical officer, I've interviewed 1,000 people, I've hired 100 people, pretty effectively too, especially after I developed an intelligence test. It was basically, that was the way to do it. But I was pouring a lot of Hey, let's go here. Hey, let's go to there. Hey, let's do that. I mean, I remember I gave a friend of mine who wanted to act a role in a play that I was directing. It generated a lot of stuff, generated businesses, generated jobs, generated activities. Let's do this. Let's do that. A friend of mine, when we were working up north, we got a month off. And back then, Air Canada had, you could pay a certain amount of money and you could fly anywhere in Ontario, Quebec for a month. And we just spent the whole month flying around, staying in hostels, seeing stuff, doing stuff, generating all of that. I mean, didn't pay for it, but coming up with the ideas and making things happen. I put a lot into my relationships. Make things happen. And then, you know, at some point that niggling brain worm pops up in your head that says, is this really equal? Is this reciprocal? Is this balanced? Do they care as much about me as I care about them? Do they care as much about generating interesting and enjoyable things as I do? You ever do this? If you're a too-mucher, and I, you know, tried to hold my family together, tried to make positive things happen, and so on. I certainly was, it's less so now, I was a too-mucher. And then at some point, like, it's just Jenga, right? You just keep taking little blocks out. Oh, I wonder about this. Okay, if I stop putting energy into this, what happens? Okay, if I stop putting energy into that, what happens? In other words, have I trained people to be passive receivers of the energy and resources that I put out? What happens if I stop? What happens if I stop putting out, right? What happens if I stop being a too-mucher? Well, as it turns out, if I stop being a too-mucher, the me plus, well, there's nothing. 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 You know, it's like you're in a tandem bike with someone and you're busted your quads, flexing your butt cheeks like Jean-Claude Van Damme between two Volvo buses, and you're getting up the hill, and the other person's just sitting back there with their legs on the bar smoking. And what happens if you stop pedaling? If you need a rest, if you need a break, if you're tired, what happens? Well, of course, you hope that if you stop pedaling, the other guy is going to drop his cigarette and get his frickin' feet on the pedals and start grinding his gears. That's what you hope. But what happens if you stop pedaling and the whole thing, you just start coasting back down towards the T intersection with the trucks? Well, you got to jump off. What happens if you stop being a too-mucher and you stop pedaling for both of you? What happens? What happens if you stop pouring energy into people and you see what comes back? I got to take a break, guys. I've been pedaling for too long. My legs are killing me. Like, I'm getting cramps. I can see like giant troll thumbs. Invisible troll thumbs are pressing into my muscles. I can see these ripples. Like, I'm going to really hurt myself. I'm going to pull something bad and tear a muscle. So I'm going to stop pedaling. And then you just start sliding backwards and you're going to crash. It's going to be bad. What happens if you stop pouring energy into other people? What happens if you let them pedal for a while? What happens if you stop overcompensating and start expecting equality? I must pour energy, time, resources into my relationships. I must. You don't. Must. It's not a virtuous relationship if you're pouring additional resources into people because you feel that's what you must do, or you're avoiding the anxiety of finding out what you're actually worth to people if you're not working like some manic, coked up Stephen King directing monkey, pouring resources, energy, time, humor, jokes, jobs into people. What happens if you stop peddling? Well, if you pour resources into people because you're afraid of finding out if they really care about you as you, not just for what you provide, but as you, well, it's not a good thing. It's not a kind thing. It's not a positive thing. It's not a virtuous thing. It's just a fear thing. If I don't provide resources, people won't like me. They won't pay any attention to me. They won't care about me. I won't have anyone to go to Quebec and Ontario with for a month. I'll be alone. But that's not good. So with the caller, again, with his permission, I said, sorry, why do you have to talk to them? Why do you have to talk to this person? Well, I've got to be honest. I've got to tell the truth. I owe them that much and blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, then you don't have a choice. You don't have a choice. If you have to do it because it's the right thing to do, then why are you calling me for advice? I said, how I should do it? And I said, but the how assumes the why. How do I climb Mount Everest carrying a medium-sized pachyderm? Come on, let's puzzle this out. I have a question. Not how do you climb Mount Everest with a medium-sized pachyderm on your back, but why would you climb Mount Everest with a medium-sized pachyderm on your back? Why? That seems a bit more relevant. This is the foundation of voluntarism or anarcho-capitalism. How should the government provide these services? Let's René Descartes it. Let's blank slate it. Let's wipe the blackboard clean. Not how should the government provide these services. Why should the government provide these services? Not how do you talk to someone who's done you wrong for many years, but why should you talk to someone who's done you wrong for many years? Well, the people who call me up and waste my time trying to sell me garbage ass white paper stocks, how do I tell them the truth? What truth do I... Why do I need to tell the truth about the people who are intruding and will just call me back and tie up my phone line like it's trespassing? I don't mind the first time, but, you know, and I'd say to them, take me off the list. Yeah, we'll get to that. And they just call back. Right? It's not the how that is the first question. It's the why or the whether. Why do I have to talk to this person? Now, there could be a good reason, but if you just assume on the basis of a kind of totalitarian, flock-based, fascistic set of orders called philosophy that you have to do it like you're a train on a tracks, then you're not good. You're good if you choose. Maybe there are good reasons for talking to this person, maybe there aren't. But assuming that you have to talk to this person because there's this virtue called honesty, such a lonely word, because there's this virtue called honesty, I have to. Nope. I mean, where you have honesty in a relationship, people are honest with you. I think you owe people. But we've all had this, right? You go to your spam folder for whatever reason. Wasn't there something in the, was it in the Alex Jones trial where they said he was sending some sort of very salacious or negative material? It turned out it was just the contents of his junk folder, which you can't really control. But, you know, you have this thing where your renewal is coming up for something, and maybe it's something you even have. And then, of course, you go to the from, and it's some Elon Musk-named Eastern European keyboard mash of an email address, not from the actual place. Do you say, well, you know, I am obligated to pay my bills, and this is a bill that came in, I must pay it? No. No. Because, of course, it's fraudulent, right? This one's your credit card number. It's fraudulent. So you don't owe paying the bill if the bill is fraudulent, and you don't owe the truth to people who are fraudulent. The people who were calling me up, I mean, it's legal, I suppose, for these guys to call you up and 10x your money in 10 months, and wouldn't you like to have that beautiful Caribbean vacation or buy a new car for your wife? Right. Just dangle this OnlyFans horror of selling your soul. I guess it's legal, but it's not moral. It's not moral. So do I owe honesty to people who are not moral? Nope. I really don't. If I say to someone, hey man, here's what I need in this relationship, and it's a just and fair request, you know, like I did this for you, I'd really appreciate it if you did something to me, or whatever it is, right? You know, if you've got some friend and you've lent him a bunch of money over the years, and obviously he's paid you back or whatever, and then you need to borrow some money, he's like, ooh, I'm not comfortable with that. It's like, that seems a bit odd, because you were very comfortable borrowing the money and you don't want to lend the money. That seems kind of not consistent. You know, let's at least have a conversation about this, right? And let's say the guy doesn't want to have a conversation with you, won't lend you the money. I mean, do you say, hey, I'd like to talk about this. And he's like, yeah, we'll get to it. Some point, right? And never contacts you for a while. I mean, what do you do? Oh, I got to sit down and talk, got to explain. Nope. He borrowed money from you for years. He will not lend you money. And let's say he's got it, right? So he's got the money. And even if he doesn't have the money, maybe he has a line of credit. Maybe he can, whatever, right? If you've fronted someone money for years, then it's reasonable to expect that they may lend you if they could, and usually people can, to some degree or another. So do you owe him pursuit? Do you owe him more truth? Do you owe him more honesty? Nope. Well, I gotta be. You know, if I choose not to see this guy anymore because I was annoyed that he never lent me any money after I'd lent him money for years and wouldn't talk to me about it, and I told him what I needed, and I gotta tell him why. I gotta tell him why I'm not gonna talk to him anymore and get closure. And nope. I mean, hey, if you want it, I mean, you can do it if you. I mean, I'm not saying you can't, right? Because, you know, if I say you have to, or you can't, right? Those two are just giving you orders. It's not, why do I never tell people what to do? I don't tell people what to do. Because if they do something because I tell them, there's no moral content in it. I mean, if you say to your kid, if you don't share that toy, you will never see a screen again until you're an adult. And then the kid, oh, okay, share the toy. Oh, look, she's learned the value of sharing. Oh, it's beautiful. Look how well she shares. Oh, magnificent. Hugs all around. Like, nope. She's got no moral virtue or value in sharing, even if we say that sharing is a moral value or virtue. No moral content. Just been threatened. So if you say, well, I've got to tell the truth, because if I don't tell the truth, I'm going to call myself a bad person who lied and is immoral. Then there's no moral content in telling the truth. You cannot tell the truth if you make yourself tell the truth, right? I mean, this is really, really important. Sorry, of course it is, right? Been an hour on this, right? It's really, really important. If you pay a woman to be your, quote, girlfriend for the weekend, right? Some escort gives you the girlfriend experience, right? Is she your girlfriend? Nope. It's just incentives. I mean, she's faking it, I suppose. Not that I've ever known a woman who fakes it, but she's faking it, right? She's not your girlfriend. Come Sunday night or Monday morning, she's like, okay, I need my money and take care. Love to do it again if you've got the money. But she's not your girlfriend. She's simply responding to incentives. She doesn't care about you. She doesn't love you. She's not going to buy you a birthday present. She's not going to ask if you slept well. She's not your girlfriend. The welfare state is not charity. People who are forced to do things are not responsible for them. And if you force yourself to do something, it's not good. Truth is something that must be chosen. If you simply order yourself to tell the truth, you can't tell the truth. Because telling the truth is an act of virtue, and an act of virtue has to be chosen, not compelled. Now, if you don't want to tell the truth, and you say, well, I have a virtue called telling the truth, so I have to tell the truth, I'm going to force myself to tell the truth, all you've achieved is threat and dominion and enforcement, not virtue. If somebody who's about to steal sees a security camera and then decides not to steal, have they done anything virtuous? Nope. Nope. They haven't chosen to respect property rights and blah, 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 blah. Nope. They're just, I don't want to get caught. Oh, I don't want to get caught. Oh, if I get caught for stealing, I could miss my third offense. I could actually go to jail, unless I get a female judge, in which case I'll get a warm lecture and set free. No. You can only tell the truth if you choose to tell the truth. If you just give yourself orders, you're not telling the truth. You're just mouthing words. There's no moral content. If a man is forced to rob a bank, he's not robbing a bank. He's going through the motions on the basis of compulsion. A man washing up, a fat man washing up on a desert island with very little food, doesn't get to say, I think I'll choose to diet. Like, what was his name? Chumley on Lost? The guy with the giant head of Brillo hair who weighed a good 300 plus pounds. And he's on this desert island with very little food. And mysteriously, he maintains his weight. It's magic. I've chosen to lose weight. I've chosen to diet. It's like, bro, you're on a desert island. You didn't choose anything. You don't have enough food. That's not the same as dieting. You know, one of the roots, I think, of the obesity crisis has to do with men who came back from wars were thin and starved. There's a scene in Mrs. Miniver where the guy has come back from the war. He was overweight before the war. He's slender now, and he starts eating like a pig. You know, when there was a guy, I think it was in the 50s, volunteered for starvation rations to some degree, and they all lost massive amounts of weight. They were on this thing for 2 years, and they became obsessed with food and so on. Now, they're, quote, starvation rations were a little over 1,600 calories a day. So they weren't starving. They weren't pulling some 500 calorie Dallas Buyers Club Matthew McConaughey self-starving, or some machinist Christian Bale thing, but 1,600 calories. Now, when they were finally out of this experiment, what they needed to do to gain weight was to eat like 4,000 calories or 5,000 calories. And so when you're at war, you're hungry. It's one of the sort of things that happens because it's just highly, you've a high degree of physical activity. At sometimes, I know the army's a lot of hurry up and wait, but sometimes it's like a lot of physical activity, a lot of adrenaline, a lot of fear, a lot of sleeplessness. It's all terrible for your system and not enough food often, right? How many people come back from the front lines fat? Well, no one. I guess you also want to be a smaller target. And so they came back and they were hungry. They had years of suppressed appetites. And then they gorged. A lot of them became overweight. And if you're overweight, that can transmit itself genetically. I don't know if it's male. I'm not positive, but it's possible. Well, it's possible is not a great argument, but... So the people at war, were they on a diet? Nope, they just didn't have enough food. Stuck on some island off the coast of Japan, no food. Or some Japanese soldier who sits in the jungle for 30 years because he doesn't know the war is over. There's no food. I mean, very little, right? So that which is done under compulsion has no moral content. So if you want to be good, you can't make yourself be good. You have to choose it. You have to choose it. And if you're following orders, you can't be good because you're not pursuing virtue for the sake of virtue. What are you doing? What you're doing is you are avoiding the prison of self-attack. And listen, this is a very common phenomenon in the world. Excuse me, very common phenomenon in the world. Virtue signaling. I want to feel good. I don't want to do good. I don't want to be criticized. I want to be viewed as a good person, so I'll support X, Y, or Z. Usually leftist policy, because I don't want to be seen as mean. I want to be seen as a nice person and so on. You can see this with when leftists talk to people on the right, they genuinely can't comprehend how anyone could have a different opinion because their opinions are the good, and they're not chosen. They're just inflicted. And their friendships are based upon them having these opinions or perspectives. And if they were to even question these opinions or perspectives, then they're far-right fascists and so on. Like this absolutely wretched woman, a woman of immense and enormous privilege, who went to like a crazy expensive private school, PhD from Harvard, I think it is, this woman. That's why I used to read The Economist when I was in my teens and 20s. I haven't read it in decades because it's just absolute trash, just mealy-mouthed, virtue signaling, woke garbage. And this woman has the audacity to sit down with Elon Musk, who is, as to her, as Jupiter is to one of its moons in terms of intellect, and has the nerve to call a far right an extremist. And these are just buzzwords. It's just a buzzword to signal that you don't know how to think. Thinking is hard. Judging is both easy and wrong. Judging without thought, right? If you think, okay, then you can earn your way to judgment. But judging without thought is easy. It's reactive. It's animalistic. It's instinctive and wrong. And she literally thinks it's an argument to say to Elon Musk, you know, there are some people who don't like you. It's so junior high. Oh, you know, Beth like totally has a problem with you. Like she just thinks you're so stuck up and vain. And Beth is just like, you're the worst. Oh, okay. I'll change because Beth has a negative. Oh my gosh. You know, some people say you're racist. Oh, what do you say? What do you say to racist? Oh, what do you say? Some people don't like you. Some people use negative words. Some people think you're bad. Oh, yeah, vocal fry my brain. I would argue that she's probably pretty racist because she wouldn't say that to a, she would never say that to a black man or an Indian man or a, she wouldn't say that. She would only say that to a white male. It's racist and sexist. So don't give yourself orders. Don't be good out of fear of self-attack. Don't be smaller than your values and be pushed around by them. I know, because, you know, we've got to have our ability to compare proposed actions to ideal standards. Absolutely. And again, I'm not talking about UPB violate. I'm talking about the general aesthetics of living. Where our moral decisions are is not, ooh, I really want to smack that guy up. Ooh, I really want to steal this stuff. Ooh, like, that's not where I think most of us are, right? Don't be nice to people because you're afraid they won't like you if you're not. Don't order yourself to be honest because you don't want to call yourself dishonest and bad. Don't order yourself to provide resources to people for fear that they won't like you if you don't, or you won't have any friends if you don't. I mean, for women, of course, it's don't offer up sex to get a man's attention or to try and snag a man or bag a man. For men, it's don't flash resources and, right, be liked for who you are. And if you are a pinball bouncing around from the various bing, 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 rubber baby buggy bumpers of, that was a old warm-up, rubber baby buggy bumpers, that's a warm-up for theater to get your lips and palate moving. See, Freddie Mercury can do vocal warm-ups in public. Ew, right? Actors, not so much. The raid in Spain falls mainly on the migrants. Don't make yourself do stuff, man. Where you make yourself do stuff, you don't exist. Because you're taking the compulsion of virtues, which themselves have no life, and using them to overshadow your choice. You are known by what you choose, and if you force yourself to do stuff, you can't be known by what you choose. You can only be obscured by what you obey. Obedience is empty. Obedience, and anybody can obey anything. We saw this under COVID. People just obey. And didn't we have contempt? I mean, to some degree. Where somebody is obedient, where they substitute external bribes and threats for internal thought and choice, well, they don't really exist. You don't exist when you're under compulsion, which is why a man who's forced to rob a bank, we don't hold him as guilty of a moral crime. He didn't make that choice. He didn't exist. He was simply complying, obeying. It's the Nuremberg principle. The leaders with choice are held accountable. The soldiers forced are not. Don't put yourself under compulsion. It's the devil's work because it has you chase a virtue that disappears when you force it. It's like saying, well, a woman who lives under my roof must really love me, so if I lock someone in the basement, that's the same thing. Nope. That's just being there under compulsion. Don't do things under compulsion. Don't do things under compulsion. Make the choices. Achieve the virtues. Manifest yourself to people. And then, and only then, can you be someone who can be loved. If you're under compulsion, you're absent. You're frightened. You're obedient. You don't exist. You conform like water has no shape. It conforms to a vessel. And you have no shape if you're simply conforming to rewards and punishments. Well, if I tell the truth, I'm a good person. And if I don't tell the truth, I'm a liar and I'm a bad person. Well, it's just compulsion. There's no virtue in that. You're just threatening and bribing yourself with good opinion or self-punishment. It's not virtue. You've just drafted yourself into a war called virtue, and the virtue disappears because you drafted yourself. All that you force yourself to choose has no moral content. If you make yourself be honest, you can't be honest, because honesty is a virtue that must be chosen, not compelled. Not compelled. Also, it's not sustainable. Also, you're highly susceptible to manipulation and external influence and so on. So, and that's the secret. That's a secret. It's a big secret. And it goes against most moral philosophy. Certainly, it goes against religious moral philosophy, which is be good to go to heaven. If you're bad, you go to hell, or you're excluded from heaven. Or it's just punishments and rewards, incentives, bribes and threats. And this is why there's no moral progress in theology. But the moral progress comes from having the joy and the self-respect to actually choose things rather than make yourself do things, which is to remain in a state of bad parenting, threatening schooling, bribe, punishment, heaven and hell, reward incentives, being a pinball bouncing around. We don't blame a pinball for where it ends up because it's just an inert object bouncing around between various bumpers and thrusters and bings and bangs and bombs. So don't be that. Don't bounce around from reward and punishment and call yourself good. It won't work. You won't exist. You can't be loved. And you fundamentally can't have self-respect for obeying orders. Choose good. Choose virtue. That which is compelled can never be good. So do not compel yourself to virtue or it evaporates in your hand. Freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Thank you so much for your very kind support and your very kind attention. I love everyone who participates in what we do. It's the greatest conversation there ever will be in the world. Freedomain.com/donate. And if you would like a call, of course, call.freedomain.com. Lots of love, my friends. Talk to you soon. Bye.